Welcome to Never Overnight, where the focus is the struggle, the success, and the story in between. My name is Benad Jacob, and I'm your host. In today's episode, I talk with Zoe Malhotra. She's an Indian-American documentary director. In both her commercial and narrative work, she focuses on projects of cultural exploration, primarily through the lens of women of color and families. I first took note of Zoe's directing work via the Kids of Immigrants Fall 2022 campaign. As a child of immigrants myself, I connected deeply with the theme of that campaign, titled We Are Our Parents' Wildest Dreams. What struck me more was how the campaign was creatively promoted and directed, which included Zoe and her father's story. It inspired me so much, it led to having today's conversation with her. Zoe has experienced struggle, success, and this is her story. Zoe, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you, how's it feel like to be in a little podcast room? Are you nervous?
I am definitely nervous. More so just about having to hear my voice.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm not used to. And also, not that I'm in front of the camera, but not used to being in front of the camera. Yeah. Or being interviewed, actually. I'm usually interviewing people. So
wow. How's it feel to be on the other side of the mic now?
I don't know. I guess now I like empathize with everyone I've ever interviewed before now. I have a whole new sense of perspective. Wow, this is really good for me, I guess. Look at this.
Wow, compliments are flowing. Cool.
Yeah, there we go. You're doing great.
Thank you. So what drew me to you immediately was the Kids of Immigrants campaign that I saw.
Thank you.
You were tied to that, and then you had a post specifically about your connection with your dad and how important he is in your life. And I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, this is such a deep story that needs to be shared to like a lot of people. And obviously, like the listeners right now, they don't know what that story is with your dad. So I guess we'll open it up about, let's talk about your dad in terms of his upbringing, how your dad played his part in bringing who you are today.
Yeah. Wow. Would love to talk about that. So my dad is Indian and ended up growing up in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates for majority of his life. And then he came to the U.S. when he came to college. So he came to Dartmouth and he actually entered as pre-med. And I think from his perspective and from what I know, he entered pre-med just very certain that he was going to become a doctor. That's kind of what he was raised and told his whole life. That's what he just kind of worked towards in college. And that was just his experience and what he just knew pretty much was going to be his life moving forward. And so he took a few classes, did like medicine. I think he did like a chemistry course that he said, and immediately hated it. Just could not stand it and realized, I can't do this. If this is what's going to be my career, if this is going to be my life. And I don't know exactly what was going through his mind at the time, if it was because he was in a new country with a lot of new opportunities and had the option to change majors, or if it was because it was his first time out of his home, away from his parents, first time kind of feeling a little bit more of independence. But he actually ended up switching into the film program at Dartmouth. And it was a really new program because back then film majors weren't super common. It wasn't a career path, but he grew up loving movies. He grew up on Star Wars and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and just loved the whole theatrics of it. And I don't know too much about like how the conversation went with my grandparents and if they were super supportive of it or not. But I do know that right after graduating, he attended a talk with a film producer who had this story saying that you can't make it into the industry for another 10 years after graduating college. Like it takes at least 10 years to break it into the film industry. And in my dad's brain, he was like, I don't have the means to live off my parents, or I can't move back home because my family's in Dubai. I don't have the ability to scrum around and figure out my life for 10 whole years. That was just so daunting to him. And so he just made the decision in that moment that, okay, now I actually have to, I'm going to go get a master's in business. I'm going to get a business degree. That's really practical. He met my mom in college. And so he went into business, and that's still the work that he does now. He works in telecommunications, but he always had this love for filmmaking still. And that was something that we grew up on. And I think that's a story that I look back on because his sister, my aunt, and I always say he would just be such an incredible film producer. Like he just has all the chops about it. I think about it and I'm like, man, I wish that my dad stuck with it because he would probably be a famous film producer. And then this would be a whole lot easier for me because I would be a nepotism baby. And it would be, you know, and I was like, oh, Dad, why didn't you stick with it? But it's just so interesting that at that moment, that was that choice he had to make. And I think that in that moment, almost had to give up. And I never recognized it as that, as it was something that he had to give up. It was that something that he didn't end up pursuing because of other things. And I think I didn't realize it until recently how lucky and grateful I was to not only have the full support of my parents because they had gone through something like this, but also to have the ability to say, okay, I have the support of my parents. They're not going to be mad at me if I get a film degree instead of a law degree. And like kind of comparing my dad's experience to my experience was really how that Kids of Immigrants campaign came about, because it was, the whole campaign was, we are our parents' wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. And that quote just really became realized in my experience and with my dad's experience, because I remember a huge emotional moment was when I got into film school and my dad cried of joy, which was crazy to me, you know? And I was like, why are you crying? And I don't know about everyone with brown dads, but like, I've never seen my dad cry before. So really freaked me out a little bit. But it was also like so crazy. And I think that in that moment, it was like him realizing his dream through me of like, you get to go to a really good film school and like have the support. And I think for him, he was like just so proud that that opportunity still got realized through someone. And then to be able to bring him back on to a film set for Kids of Immigrants and show that, it was just this very big full circle meta moment story. So there we have our long emotional answer
Right off the bat. That's great. when you were in like, because you mentioned how like you're in the living room and you guys were like filming things together, you and your dad.
Yeah.
Do you feel like maybe it was practice to bring you to where you are?
Totally. And I was thinking about that the other day because I was talking to my friends who work in software engineering and they studied computer science in college. And I remember being like, how did you know what that was? You know, like, I didn't really know what software engineering was until I was like halfway through college. I was like, well, this is a career path. Like, this is all new to me. But they like went into college knowing that they were going to be software engineers. And they said, well, it's just what I grew up with. And I was like, that's so crazy. Imagine like only doing what you grew up knowing or something like that. And then I realized that's exactly what happened to me too. Like, I grew up with my parents always talking to me about movies. Every time we went to the movie theater, my dad would say like, what would you rate it? Or what do you think of the movie? And I would say it was good. And that he would never let that fly for an answer. It'd be like, you're never allowed to say it was good. You have to give me specific reasons what you liked about it. Like, he was the first one who explained to me what directing was. He was like, this is the cinematography. This is the acting. This is the money. This is the production design. The director is the one that makes it all come together. You know, I remember seeing Avatar in theaters for the first time and him telling me about James Cameron's process, you know, and I was all these new things to me. And I wasn't allowed to say it was good. I was allowed to say the music was really emotional and the story was very heartfelt, you know. And then my parents had a Handycam growing up. And so we were always making movie trailers and playing with iMovie and making fake music videos, you know, like I'm sure we all did growing up and having that on our secret YouTube pages. I went to film school because I continued to be able to build and grow on it. Like, I was able to have iMovie at home and work off a laptop and make those things. And I was like, this is so fun. I want to keep doing that for college. And I realized that I had that love and passion because of my parents.
Mm. What was the movie that really tied you and your dad together?
I think it is Avatar. I don't know if people remember, but when Avatar came out, it was like one of the first movies that did 3D and did it really well. And my dad and I saw it, and it was like a spiritual experience because it was such a beautiful movie and I had never seen anything like in 3D like that. I think just that movie tied us together, not because of that story itself, but because it was what taught us to learn to love the process of filmmaking together.
You said your dad cried when you got accepted to film school. Did you feel as if that moment right there was you kind of carrying the torch a little bit for your dad?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think I was so oblivious to it until that moment.
Yeah.
And I'm the oldest of four kids, so I was also the first person to go through the college application process in general. I think it was also just an emotional moment of like, I'm the first one to get into college and to go to college and to leave the nest and to see that. And I think that also because college inherently is such a emotional experience for a parent-child relationship because it's the first time you are doing something very independent and very on your own. And mm-hmm. I think my dad has this perspective of this was the first time he left his family overseas and completely left them for a long time and to do something very independent and very its own venture. And even though it wasn't as dramatic for me, I was still leaving different coasts. I was going from the East Coast to the West Coast. And right. so I think it was not just a realization of that experience in career and in the film industry, but also just as a child leaving their parent and doing their becoming their own independent self for the first time too.
Yeah. And when did you have your moment where you thought I can succeed at this?
That's such a good question. There was a very specific moment my senior year of college where I was selected to direct a senior thesis film. And I had come across this story about this pair of mother-daughter chefs in LA, and it had such a beautiful story, and I really wanted to document it. And I thought it would be perfect for this class. So I actually pitched myself to be in this class to the heads of the department, and I got in and I got selected to actually be, they select just three projects out of a ton of different graduate students, and I was one undergrad student that made it through. And I think that moment, realizing it was a small win in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And also when I really think about it, like I think that year probably had a ton of other losses. Like I think there were other projects that I wanted to work on that I didn't get. I remember I was constantly applying to internships and I didn't get like any of the internships I wanted. And it was like so many low moments, but there was just this one win. And I think sometimes that's just all you need. It's just one win in the sea of losses to remind you like you can still do this and you can be successful. It was a really hard project to make, but it did end up being made and was pretty successful. And so having that was, I think, a big moment.
This was, you said mother-daughter. This is the God Bless the Cook?
Yeah, God Bless the Cook.
All right,
yeah.
let's brag about that a little
yeah,
bit.
Sure.
All right, so the movie was screened at almost 20 film festivals worldwide. All right, so let's just mention that for the audience. How did that feel knowing that, hey, this was seen worldwide?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, like the film festival world itself is just so wild and so complicated and like competitive. Yeah. And I think that like I was super lucky to have the support of like my school and to have a co-director, Annalise Pastor, who I'll shout out. We actually got to screen at a lot of like local LA festivals too, which was really exciting. And the really fun part about that is that we brought the two main subjects of the documentary, Rosalind Spence and her mom, Edith Bell. I think her mom is now 98. She was 94 at the time. And they would just dress up to the premieres. And it was so fun because they would do like Q&As mm-hmm. and I wouldn't have to do them because I would just have them do it, which is really fun. Like all the other directors would be there and I'd be like, no, you guys take the stage. And it was so amazing just to be able to like continue to share that experience. And I think the biggest success out of all of that is that like their family got to memorialize their story in some way. Yeah. And we got to have like, I get emails from them, texts from them like every other month being like, can we have another DVD of it? You know, we make a little DVD and send them. And even though I could just send them a Vimeo link, you know, they're like emailing DVD, they're mailing DVDs to each other. So I think on top of the festivals, that is a really exciting experience. And I think it's really cool, especially in the doc world, because visibility is so important. And like you can run a media campaign and a press campaign and actually turns into an impact campaign of people to actually learn about a story and its importance and its impact on people. And so I think to also say that we were able to get so many eyes on it was to also say that we were able to get that many eyes on a story about a mother-daughter relationship and a story of like Black Creole cooking, and to be able to share that with the world is really exciting.
Mm. And you talked about, you mentioned right now how like the film market on a worldwide level is super competitive. Would you say that is a challenge in your field?
Oh yeah. I think the film market is incredibly competitive. I think the industry changes every year. Personally, something that I have to remind myself that the people love stories, people love, you know, there will always be an audience for the stories that you want to tell. And even if the market and the landscape isn't looking too hot right now, it's something that's not permanent. It doesn't mean that movies are going to go away forever. You know, we're still going to have a support system for it, even though it's just not as hot right now.
And considering that is a challenge,
yeah.
How do you, Is there a way to set yourself apart from that?
I think it's consistency, and I think I'm like pausing right now because I'm like, this is something that I have to tell myself every single day. You know, like I'm thinking about it. Don't worry, I'm definitely thinking about this a lot. But I think something that I always come back to and keeps me motivated is a reminder of like, what is something that I would want to watch and like would impact me as like maybe my younger self or for a version of myself that would have needed a story like this. And I think that it's always a good reminder that the things you like, you're not so alone in what you like and what you like to watch. There are tons of people out there who will share that with you. And I know that when I made God Bless the Cook, I was thinking I really want to make a story. Deep down, I realized I just wanted to watch something joyful and fun and lighthearted. Yeah. And that's what I got to make. And I think it's a good reminder that even if you have a lot of people telling you, well, that's not what the industry wants right now, or that's not what people want right now, if it's something that you personally really want and you want to make and you want to watch at the end of the day, you're your own person and you have your own unique perspective, but you still will always have an audience behind you of people that want to watch your stuff too.
Got it. And in your career, you've had a lot of successful moments. You've directed impact-driven commercials for eBay, DoorDash, Six Flags, and a lot more, right? Mm-hmm. So do you have moments of self-doubt, even considering how far you've come?
Oh, yes. Tons of moments of self-doubt. Something that has helped me is when I hear like big-time directors, like, you know, people like Christopher Nolan or whatever, just like very well-known people talk about still having imposter syndrome. I think the nature of this industry is constantly comparing your work and trying to make your work better than someone else's or something. It just feels like you're always in competition with the other art that's out there. But I think the reminder is the reason we all want art is we want diversity and we want something different and we want something unique and that has an authentic perspective. And that is something that helps me overcome imposter syndrome, which I get all the time. Like, especially as a woman of color and South Asian creative, in this new wave of appreciation for diversity and diverse movements, I sometimes get pigeonholed of like, well, this is what the South Asian perspective should be. Like, and you should all think the same and agree the same. Like, you should be telling a story about a big fat Indian wedding, right? Because that's what all South Asian creatives do. Like, you should. There doesn't feel like there's room for nuance right now. It feels like there's just room for one perspective. And I think that's something that I've had to overcome because I see successful female South Asian creatives make a project and I'm like, well, I can't do that anymore. Like, I can't be a successful female South Asian director because there already is someone and they just want to give all the projects to one person or they just want to give the projects to that one perspective. And I think it's a reminder that like that is so dangerous to just have one perspective and one person of representation that tells our entire story. Like, I want to see like two South Asian directors tell like completely opposing stories, you know, like opposing perspectives to one story, because that's what shows off the beauty and the intricacy of our culture and of any culture too. There's room for all of us at the table. You know, there's room for like a whole crowd of people at the table. We can fill the room and like bust down the building and even more. Yeah. So
you talked about like representation, how the table can have like a lot of people that look similar.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a rise of that, especially like post, you know, pandemic. What is your perspective on like what we're seeing, I guess, in terms of the representation like South Asians?
Yeah, I think it's so great right now. And I just hope that it doesn't like die down or stop at this.
Yeah.
One example that I think is incredible is the most recent season of Bridgerton on Netflix, which starred two South Asian women. And what I love about Bridgerton is that they are able to integrate like their culture and story. Like, there's a scene where they're putting like haldi on their face before a wedding without making it an issue of the story. Like, they could have so easily tied in a storyline that's like, well, the white duke or the white king or whatever doesn't like the brown women, so like that's what they have to overcome, is like the racist family or something like that. Like, there was no talk of their race being an issue. And just watching these two women be able to be like a beautiful love interest without there being like a problem was very beautiful for me to witness and for me to see. And I feel like that is where we continue the movement. What I hope and what I think is, and what I hope to inspire, you know, executives and people to greenlight are stories that are different, that we haven't ever seen a brown woman in this role before. So let's do it. Let's do something different and let's continue to push the narrative so that we can just create a more open and accepting world.
Do you have like a dream collaboration of someone that you'd want to work with? I mean, we can manifest it right now. So
many dream collaborations, but I would love to work with Rihanna and specifically with Fenty Beauty, because I have such a interesting relationship with my skin tone, as all South Asian women do. And that's a storyline that I've really wanted to talk about and explore recently. And I just love how Fenty just completely embraced the diversity of skin tones. And it is very crazy that she was like the first skincare brand to ever have a foundation that dark. Like, it came out like 5 years ago. Like, don't quote me on that exactly, but it's like, that's crazy that it was so recently. And she just has so much, Rihanna has so much intention behind her work. And the fact that her story and her product line didn't just resonate with like black women, but also resonated with me and tons of other women of color, that I think that she can really tap into all the stories of women of color and people of color and just like different marginalized groups around.
You mentioned before about your younger self.
Yes.
What would Zoe tell her younger self now?
Oh man. I would tell my younger self to keep listening to what I find inspiring and what I want to make and in art, and keep following that. Because in this industry, and I think in any creative industry where you take an act or an ability or a talent that's supposed to be really creative and you monetize it, it becomes really easy to feel like there's a lot of boundaries on your work, and there's only a specific way that you can do things. And I feel like when I was younger, I used to have just like, I would just stay up just telling my sister's stories. Like, I shared a room with my sisters and I would just like stay up for hours making up stories. And like, I took a screenwriting class recently and I was like, I cannot do this. Like, I can't write a story. What am I doing? And I realized it's because I'm just overthinking so much, because you've grown up in a world that says like, this is what a character has to do. This is what's good. This is what's bad. And I just wasn't thinking about that when I was younger. And if I could go back, it would just be to hold on to that and not let go of that and not pay attention to what the world is telling you what's right and wrong, and really just believe in yourself and what you think is going to make something cool.
Got it. And in the director game, I'm not 100% sure, but do you think it's still like a man's game?
I can only say from my experience.
Yeah.
I think yes. I think the world is still a man's world. I think yes, it's still a man's game. You're going to definitely find a lot more people that are like, yeah, like, we want to hire more women. We want to hire more women. Like, give me all your female recs. Like, you know, I'll work on projects. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. Like, let's hire a female DP and let's hire women gaffer and stuff. And then they do like a one search, you know, and the first five people that are available are all male. And they're like, well, I didn't find any women, you know. And you're like, okay, we need to spend a little bit extra time to find women.
Yeah.
And maybe their reel isn't going to be as glamorous as the male reel, because they just didn't have the opportunities. And then you find out that like their reel, like, they didn't have a $100,000 budget. They had like $2 and a piece of paper to use as a bounce, you know, and they still made it look that good. And so
yeah.
I think there's still that discrepancy in the access point. I think that way better than it was 20 years ago. I don't think I would have been able to succeed or be where I am now, but I think that there's still a good amount of ways to go.
Focusing on women of color and families, what made that specifically your focus?
I just think that my family and my family story really impacted who I am and how I grew up. And I think especially in America, with a lot of like third culture kids or second generation families, your family story and your concept of culture is really different and varied, but that means that there's so many beautiful stories there. And I think that I recognized that pretty early on. And it just happened to be what I love talking about and what I love like asking people about. And so in the DoorDash project, they were like, we want you to interview this woman who runs this restaurant called Ayara Thai and like talk about her story. And so it's just like, oh, what's your story? How do you run the restaurant? At first, I thought my angle was going to be about being a woman in the culinary industry, which is a really, really cutthroat, very male-driven industry, even to this day. But she just kept talking about her mother and how her mother runs the business with her and how she runs the back of house like a family. And I was like, that's beautiful. And that really caught my attention. I realized I really want to make her family the focus of this story, even though that wasn't my intention. I think that was the moment that I realized this is the area that I love working on. And I love working with families and family stories and how your family impacted you and affected you. And I think it just makes for really cool storytelling.
And speaking of family stories, which is exactly how I caught on to with Kids of Immigrants.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say enough incredible things about that brand. It's started by three incredible people, Debbie, Welle, Daniel, who are kids of immigrants themselves. And they are second generation, all have a similar family story, but also like very different cultures. Like some people are Latina, some are Mexican, some are Black, some have like Asian ancestry. There's just so many different stories, but having this one commonality of being second generation was actually really grounding. And I just came across this brand and their story. They're very story forward. So you know exactly about them, exactly why they have this brand called Kids of Immigrants, like who is the community that it's for. And I just felt so seen by it because I grew up feeling just, I didn't want to share my family story and my cultural differences that I had with like some of my white classmates. Like I just didn't feel comfortable or proud or excited about it. And then, you know, we've all done the work. I went through college. I met a lot of people who had similar stories to me. I thought it was great. And then I saw this brand and they just look so cool. And they were so proud to share their immigrant heritage. They were able to connect with tons of other people that were like them. And even though they all maybe had different stories or different upbringings, this one thing brought them all together. And to see a group of people be so proud of it was like, I thought that I had overcome that shame and I had done the work, but I just saw in that moment, I said, wow, no, this is what I really needed. And this is where I want to tell stories. And I had actually been working in branded content for a while, and I really wanted to move into fashion, but I didn't feel like I had found a brand that was like I was able to tell a cool story to that spoke to me. And then I saw Kids of Immigrants and it changed my whole perspective. Like I feel like I view clothing so much differently now and how you wear it and the stories that it can tell. And so I came across the brand and I reached out to Debbie, who's the CMO, and she's really great. And we just started a relationship where we just had like a call and we talked about how it just felt like we were really in sync. And one day texted me a photo of their fall drop. And it was just like this like photo with tons of different clothes and stuff on it. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, thanks for sharing. She goes, this is your baby. Like now you're a creative directing this brand campaign. This is your baby. And I was like, what? And I was just remember looking through, called my friends over. I was like, guys, look at how cool these shirts are. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have all these ideas. Like it was just so cool to be able to just have that creative freedom. I had kind of thought about my dad being one of the families that we featured, and me and my dad. And I was like, this story is actually really similar with the theme, we are our parents' wildest dreams. And Debbie just flat out said, no, I want to feature you and your family. Like you've mentioned this before. We definitely you are going to be one of the family members. And she kind of like pulled that plug because I'm not used to being in front of camera or to really sharing my story. And so, yeah, it was such like a beautiful, incredible experience. And I think I'm so lucky. Definitely recommend checking out their stuff and checking out their story.
My last question that I have for you, what would be your advice to the little Zoes out there that want to do what you're doing?
My advice is that we don't have enough stories out there, and I don't think we ever will. So use that as motivation to keep telling your story and your perspective, and a reminder that everyone has a unique story and unique perspective to offer. And no matter how saturated the field gets, if it feels like there are millions of other creators who are doing what I want to do, like Elizabeth Gilbert writes about how ideas are energy, and I don't know if this ever happens to you, but it happens to me all the time, where you have an idea that you like you think of something 5 years ago and you're like, that's really cool. And then you turn around 5 years later and it's just that idea on a billboard, you know? And like, yeah. Christopher Nolan's directing it and it's really cool. And you're like, man, I thought of that. Like, if only I'd put on the energy and turned it into something. But that's just how like the world works. And to not get discouraged by how many exciting things are out there and how many exciting things are being made, because you are still worthy and your stories are still of value, and to keep pushing and making them no matter what.
That was beautifully said.
Thank you.
All right, Zoe.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, feel free to subscribe to the channel by searching Never Overnight on wherever you stream your podcast from. Thank you to Zoe for sharing her story, and thank you for listening.